Welcome to the Round 1 Supercoach Coach Podcast. We've had the first week of footy play. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. I am excited tonight. Setting a new standard this year. I scored more than you this week, and I'm going to stay in front for the rest of the year, mate.
Yeah, I don't want to rub it in, but I think I may have the last three or maybe even four years. It's getting to be a streak now, so yeah.
I'm in front at the moment, buddy, so that's all that counts.
And two, Mark, we were 1 point apart when I put out the status update on Easter Monday, and the only difference was Lewis v. Selwood, and you actually recommended Lewis, and I decided to go with Selwood. We had a last-minute discussion, and well done, mate. I'm very, very impressed with that one. And I know
so that was about 100 points then.
Huge, huge. But we should get to our actual scores first. So I scored 1990, puts me a rank of 50K, Mark. That's my worst ever start. But look, that's an indication that the general Supercoach public are getting better at Supercoach, and we're part of that, Mark. So silver lining sort of thing.
One way to look at it, man. I think I was about 70,000 after round one last year, and then my rank shot up pretty quickly after that. So a lot can change after week one, mate, but I scored 2076, ranked inside the top 20,000. Ooh, is that like the top 1% or something, 10%? It's a bit of a slow start, but I'm happy enough with that. A few poor scores out there, but yeah, like you said, Lewis probably made me a bit excited on that last day.
Did you have K-Mac on field, Mark?
I certainly did.
I did not.
Yeah, only...
See?
He did not.
If I had him on, mate, we'd be right up there. That's why I've got my chin up today, because even though things haven't panned out too well, and I hope everybody else out there takes this attitude, you know, it's only week one and, you know, there's silver linings. We've had 10 weeks of preseason research, Mark. 10 podcast episodes that we put out. And since then, we've only had 2 more hours of actual in-season information. So let's not throw the baby out of the bathwater. And we'll get to a few of the distraught listeners out there in a little bit from social media. But that's my main message to start off the show with. I know there's a lot of despair out there, but we got 30 trades. How sweet is that? We still have all these options. So
there's a lot of pep in your step for someone ranked 50,000th, mate. Do you want to do a team reveal? Maybe we might check out our backlines first.
Why don't you start off with the backline? Because mine's a bit controversial, Mark.
It is a little bit. I ended up going with 3 premiums in defence. I went Kelly, Heathshaw, Hibbard, then put in Brett Goods, and then I had McIntosh and Saad as the rookies on the field, and then I've got Nathan Brown and Oxley on the bench. I was probably toying around with it towards the end, and I just decided I really want to make sure I'm following the rookies, and I figured that the midfield rookies weren't really coming up, and I sort of saw an extra one come up in the back line and thought I was happy to play 2 on the ground, and look, that worked out week one. We'll see how we go week two, but yeah, I mean, Hibbard was awful week one, but the Bombers faded pretty drastically, and he's normally a last quarter specialist, but reasonably happy with the start.
I've got 4 similar players to you on field, Mark. Kelly, Goods, and 2 rookies, so that's the same. And then the 2 different players that I have, McMillan and Pierce to your Shaw and Hibbard. So I really, really went quite cheapskate. My D2 is Clancy Pierce at 278,000.
What did he score?
He scored 60, but I put it to you this way, Mark. McMillan scored 71, he scored 85. So you paid it about 200K for 15 points. And Hibbard scored 59, which is 1 point less than Pierce, who I paid 200K less for. So, you know.
Not- let's have a look at averages after 5 rounds, mate. I'm pretty sure I saw Clancy Pierce following Travis Boak around pretty closely. And I'm not really hunting the ball very much.
Absolutely. There's some concerns. I took some risks there, but you know, Taylor Hunt came up. I didn't pick him as one of the cheap guys, even though he certainly was an option because he was the only one with the round 11 buy, and I tend to avoid those mid prices as a rule, but he's certainly an option for a correction trade, or I'm happy to upgrade. I think I saw a couple of defenders that I like over the weekend. Anyway, we'll move on to the midfield now, Mark. Who's lining up for you?
So I got 5 premiums. I went with Ablett in the end. Not happy about that at all, really, after watching his performance against the Ds, but hopefully he gets better. And then I got Pendlebury, Fife, Dangerfield, and I guess the controversial one was Jordan Lewis, which worked out week one. And then I've got 2 of the expensive rookies. I've got Cripps and Sheed, who were both absolutely pathetic. And then I got Vandenberg, Heaney, Alice Yeoman, and Miller.
I think our rookies are exactly the same, Mark.
Except you don't have Sheed. Piece of sheet.
So apart from that, the differences would be got the main 4 lock in top eight midfielder sort of thing. Ablett, Fife, Pendlebury, Selwood, and we talked about picking two out of them in the preseason. So skimping on the back line allowed me to lock in all four. Selwood was the only disappointing one so far. Hopefully he bounces back, but otherwise potential cash grab. Dangerfield, and then Robbie Gray. So I have one mid forward in my midfield. So quite a stacked midfield. I think Dangerfield was the cheapest pick there. So
yeah, if I'd have gone one more, it would have been Robbie Gray in the mids.
To the rucks now, Mark. Who did you take?
Look, I went with what I said very early on in the preseason, and that was Nick Nat and Bell Chambers. I know on the ruck show, I was pretty tempted by Todd Goldstein, but just in the end, I just felt that my instincts were sort of leaning towards Nick Nat and Bell Chambers, and reasonably happy with that choice at the moment. And I got Riley O'Brien on the bench.
Nice. I've really squeezed every last dollar, so I've got Mason Cox on the bench, which is kind of crap, but oh well, I'll deal with it. Bell Chambers, same as you, Mark, and happy at R2. Happy to have that value there instead of at the cover, just because we saw how poorly the ruck scored, and we'll get into that in this show. And I've got Todd Goldstein instead of Nick Nat. So as sort of forecasted, I was getting cold feet on Nick Nat. I may potentially be burnt by this pick. It may be an incorrect decision, but the things that finally swayed me were I was worried that he might not get enough points actually just around the ground. And the other thing was I was worried about his injury concerns. And I thought Goldstein looks a lock for the top two rocks, so I'll just lock him in. So that's the thought.
So what did you pay, mate? You paid about 80,000 extra for 8 points.
I admit that one was poor, Mark. I admit the cold feet was poor, but I'm hoping Goldstein ends up as a top two rockman, and that won't burn me too much if that's the case. So fingers crossed.
Nick Nat showed the reason why I picked him in the last quarter against the Doggies. I can't remember exactly what happened, but the balls came in. There was a dropped mark. He ran past the back of the guy, just scooped the ball up in one hand, clean grab, two steps, turn around from about 35, snap the goal.
Lies.
Pretty exciting play.
Lies. You said, I can't quite remember what happened. And then you graphically described everything so painfully, replayed it back to me. Yes, I watched that, Mark, and you're right. He does look on song and cover the ground well, and I think owners would be very happy. To the forward line, Mark, who do you have?
I've got Jimmy Bartel, got knocked out on the weekend, unfortunately. Bernal couldn't pass him up. I've got Dustin Martin. Unfortunately, at the last minute, I changed Gray to Martin, which cost me 70-odd points. Because Martin played on that first game of the weekend, I needed the money for some flexibility. So, yeah, not overly impressed by that call, but I'm sure Martin will come good. Then I got Dane Swan, which I told everyone was a lock. Then Mitch Clark, Salem, Hogan, and I went Loney in the end. I had Lamb, but then once I found out Lamb was a sub, I went Loney, and both those guys scored about the same in the end.
My forward line's exactly the same as yours, Mark. So pretty much
not a lot of controversy there then.
Yeah. Just to wrap up team reveal, Mark, happy or not happy? Panic or not panicked?
Definitely not panicked, mate. Probably main concerns are I wish that I just hadn't have started Ablett. I knew when they said he was going to play round one, but he was injured, that they were going to talk him up before that, and I fell for it, and so I'm a massive sucker. And yeah, and Dom Sheed was, I really wasn't happy with that. I wasn't happy at all with any of the options at that price, so he's looking like a corrective trade at this stage.
In terms of my team, I'm only worried that I'm a little bit inflexible. I know we talked about flexibility being important. I'm going to have to sort of manufacture some sort of value, but I'm looking forward to next week's games and being able to try and figure out a creative way of... It's one of the most exciting trade periods, Mark, next week. So anyway, we'll get into this week's show, and we've taken questions again from social media. So at SuperCoachCoach on Twitter and at facebook.com/SuperCoachCoach. Thank you for all your questions again. Huge, huge response. So obviously lots of concerns this week. So we'll get straight into it, Mark. The first question I want to lead off with is from Dono79. Got a couple of favorites on Twitter. Should I delete my team and never play Supercoach again? So obviously we're ready to just swipe this one off the table, aren't we? Because we're passionate Supercoach people. But
Look, things will turn around. Even if you've got Rockliffe and Sidebottom and Deledio, things will turn around.
Alistair Campbell, on the other hand, he wants to tell everybody to calm the F down. Only missed rookies and injured players need to be looked at this week. Worry about non-performing premiums next week before the price rise or drop. So put this one after, because I think that's probably more the attitude that we want people to take.
Yeah. And you're going to have moments of weaknesses, and you're going to think, hey, I'm going to make a crazy move and a crazy trade this week. But when you think that, just think, calm the F down.
And I think, Mark, to be honest, a little bit about being a good super coach is just a little bit of discipline, isn't it, Mark? Just holding yourself back at times.
Yeah, that's right, mate. I tried the undisciplined approach last year, learned a few things, and it ended up burning me. And so Discipline Mark is back this year.
That's great to hear, Mark. Although I got to say, I enjoyed the Mark that was just rolling the dice every week. That was pretty exciting.
It was a fun experience anyway.
Supercatch is about the enjoyment at the end of the day, Mark. Neither of us have won it yet, unfortunately, for all our wisdom. David Siddle's question's next. He managed to dodge all the injury suspensions and even the Gary Ablett issue. Well done for holding your ground there, mate.
Bastard.
I picked all the rookies and didn't spend too much on his ruckman, yet he still scored rubbish, Mark. He stopped me inventing reasons to throw out my research and use my trade. So I put this one up next because this is how I feel. I don't think I've made any terrible decisions, but my score's been crap. I had McIntosh off field. I had Cripps perform poorly. Martin and Selwood, both guys I paid a lot of money for, just went poorly. But it just happens, Mark. And, you know, it happens over the course of a 23-round season. And it's just happened first up, unfortunately. So things will turn around. David?
It can happen like that. I remember scoring really well in round one a few years ago and saying to the people that didn't score so well, geez, you guys have got no chance of catching me. And then, like, within 3 weeks, I have caught up. Like, things can change very rapidly in this game. And especially if you've got some premiums that just underperformed on the weekend, just things will turn around.
Yeah, trust us on that. I think, especially in the Supercoach landscape, Mark, there's been a lot of podcasts and advice people to come and go, but we've seen it all, I think. So hopefully nothing too crazy pops up this season. Next question is from Marcus Stent. I'm not too worried about my underperforming primos, more about rookies who scored less than 50. So this is sort of what I wanted to get onto today. Underperforming premiums, probably less of an issue. Rookies who need to be corrected next round are probably the things that we're looking out for. And we'll talk about potentially rookies that may have to be traded this round. The only other sort of category is mid-prices, Mark. So where do you sit on mid-prices and their performance after one round?
A mid-pricer, I like to give them two shots. It'd be pretty rare that a mid-pricer I wouldn't give two shots. I'd have to see them playing a role that I really wasn't happy with. Like, an example might be Ricky Henderson from Adelaide. I don't have him, but watching him on the weekend, the ball just didn't go down into the Adelaide defence very much. When it did, he looked quite good. So if you look purely at his score, you'd think that, gee, I'm going to trade him out. But really, you need to give him another chance because he seemed like he has the potential to really turn that around. So yeah, mid-prices, I generally try and give him a second shot.
Agree with those sentiments, Mark, and especially just a comment about the mid prices. I mean, they're mid priced for a reason, so they come with inherent risk. And again, you know, trust your 10 weeks of research over 2 hours of exposed form. So there's time for things to turn around. Just keep your eyes open for next week. These first 2 weeks are very important. So we'll move on to a few questions now that I want to start off with first. And that's because in the whole scheme of things, because the show and the general attitude is we want people to hold their nerve this show. We want to start with two or three questions that may require a trade this week. Rockcliffe, the first one we're going to start off with, for example, he needs a trade because punctured lung, unfortunately, with the cracked ribs. So we'll cover these guys off first, Mark, for the people who actually have to pull the trigger this week. So McClunch Magnet or Jay Cartwright from Twitter. thanks for your question as always. That name always gets us, obviously. Rockcliffe, he's wanting to know who the best option is. He has Parker and Sloan as high on his watch list. Who do you reckon a replacement for Rockcliffe would be?
I reckon they're both great picks, Parker and Sloan. Showed a heap of form in round one. I think that they showed so much form that, yeah, they might cop a tag at some stage and they might struggle a little bit. But they probably going to not copper tag a lot as well. So, I think that they're both going to score pretty well this year, and they showed in round one that they probably turn out to be pretty good picks. The other one might be that Jordan Lewis fellow.
So if you were to recommend your top three midfield replacements, for example, take out the popular ones like Fife and Pendlebury, who would you have in there?
Well, obviously Fife and Pendlebury would have to go first, if you didn't have them. I think I really liked Dangerfield games at that value price. We've been on him all preseason. And other than that, I think that you don't want to read too much into the round one performances. And if you're doing that, you're going to go, well, it's Sloan, Parker and Lewis. They're three pretty good picks. I think Job might be a pretty good pick as well once he gets a bit of run into his legs.
The next question is pretty much identical because Travis Bowen has steel side bottom, and steel side bottom is also going to need to be traded because unfortunately he's broke his thumb, and that was after a really, really strong game. I think 100
crazy strong.
145, 50 Supercoach points, but you have to trade him. And he mentioned Treloar as a potential replacement. So he's got 157 and the highest actually scoring midfielder for the round, and Griffin being in the team, being shut down, scoring only 70, being tagged. We'll get to that in a bit, but what does that mean for Treloar? Do you think he can keep this up? Because we saw some explosive scores last year, albeit inconsistent. If he can keep it up with Griffin now in the team.
I'm pretty sure he scored about 170 in round one last year against the Swans when they won. The fact that they won on the weekend probably makes his score a bit inflated. I'm really unsure on the Giants midfield. I think I mentioned in last week's show, they've got 8 really top line midfielders there that are in some way going to have to share the points and share the impact on games. So I know that the tag's going to be an issue through that, but I can't predict what's going to happen with those guys. I think Chulora is super talented, has super scoring potential, and he's going to benefit from the other guys covering a tag, but they're not going to win every week either. And there's going to be other young Giants that are going to play some pretty big roles at times, and that includes Ward and Griffin. So yeah, I think there's just too much doubt for me on Chulora.
You know who I'd have as a young gun, though, that we haven't mentioned is Ollie Wines. I think I'd almost have him. I reckon he's a very, very good chance to push for the top 8 mids this year.
That's a massive call.
Yeah, well, I mean, I saw Boak again get put under the hammer, and Wines looks like he's ready to step up again, and I don't see him, like, Boak's still so damaging that you do still need to put that attention to him. Plus they have Gray, like, and they have Gray as well, so he has to
and
be
Ebert
free.
As well, Ebert looks fit this year, and yeah, because he struggled with injury a lot last year,
and Wines certainly doesn't look like a player to plateau, and so based on that natural improvement, I really have him quite high on my target list at the moment. If I were forced to a trade, I'd actually be very tempted to just pull the trigger on him.
I think top 8 call on him is probably a little bit adventurous.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a little bit like picking Lewis in the fact that you go for Hawthorn because they win a large proportion of the pie. I mean, Ollie Wines is an elite talent. If he's untagged in a top 2, top 4 team, there's a very good chance that he'll do that. So don't underrate his potential, I reckon.
Not underrating it, just saying it's a big call. I think that amongst the young guys, I think that probably Heppel and Hanbury have at least as much chance of Wines of scoring really well this year.
The only thing about Heppel is, though, he's actually started to win the tag off Watson, whereas, you know, at least with Wines, he won't do that. But Heppel, again, impressive game, Mark. Anyway, we'll move on to the next question. It's the last guy who potentially you might want to pull the trigger on this week, and Brad Goddard's asking about Brett Delidio. Trade now, bench him for a week, and hope he comes good. So suspended for 1 week now with a head-high knock. What do you reckon?
I know he was subbed out with injury. That probably is more of a concern than the fact that he's going to sit out a week with the suspension. I'm not sure exactly what the prognosis was on the injury. I haven't really heard anything about that since the game. But I know we did speak in the preseason that he was having some issues still with his Achilles and was on a limited training load. So, yeah, I think that there's maybe a few concerns there. I'd lean towards backing my research and keeping him, but I can probably understand if you did trade him and jump. I don't know. I'm not totally ruling out that possibility. I don't have him, so what do you think?
To be honest, if I had Delidio, I would look at a premium to mid-price cash grab. Look for a guy who you think can average what Delidio is capable of, or maybe 10 points less, but at a significantly cheaper price, and set yourself up.
There's two of them out there.
And set yourself up for a fast upgrade. If he's flagging a little bit, if there are injury concerns, if he's already going to miss for suspension.
I think two players that might interest me might be Bontempelli or Taylor Adams, even from Collingwood, with Sidebottom out and Greenwood out. I think that there's room for a pretty big role for him in the Magpies midfield this year.
We actually slammed him, didn't we, early in the preseason, Mark?
Yeah, I think that things may have changed with the Greenwood injury and the Sidebottom injury.
And a couple of players also out of the team. Josh Thomas was supposed to get a bit of midfield time too. So
let's not talk about drugs anymore, mate. Asada's gone.
All right, on to the back line now. So we'll go through positionally and now cover the rest of the questions that maybe aren't as pressing, but they're still on people's minds. We were accurate to be worried with the back line this year because it turned out to be carnage in round one. The mid prices didn't turn out. Some of the premiums that we locked, like Hibbard, didn't turn out. So it was certainly an interesting one. We're going to start off with the first question. Brandon Colley. Yeah, it's on a positive note, which we're all bitter about. Brody Smith, the real McCoy. he's got 144 Supercoach points, playing purely as a winger in the midfield now, and in hindsight, almost seems too obvious.
Look, I think that the reasons why we didn't pick him are all still there, that he's going to get attention and doesn't seem to be able to handle the tag, so I don't want to go too early on this one. Kind of still wish that I picked him from the beginning, if he's capable of scores that are that big. North just didn't go to anyone, did they?
Yeah, no. But like you said, Mark, 144 is big. It's not passing on a 120 or something. Yeah, it was a
no, that's score. Like more than double what Hibbard scored. So, yeah, you can afford to have a down game now.
Yeah. Owen Ames' question is up next. He wants to know about Collar Jasny, Mark.
Is that the Geelong one or the Gold Coast one?
No, the Gold Coast one. So 360, a few people picked him for a mid-price improver despite being a second-year player, but he didn't score very well in the first round.
No, he didn't. The only reason I mentioned the Geelong one was because apparently he played pretty good in the VFL, and the Geelong small defenders might have struggled a bit on the weekend, so we might see him before too long, hopefully. But the Gold Coast one, he started off really well and then went on to Lumumba and played a defensive role, so didn't see that one coming at all. Maybe they want him to play a bit like Lumumba does, and so they put him on him to learn from him. That could be something realistic that happened. But look, I think with Gold Coast Draw, I expect KK to come good, and I certainly wouldn't panic if I had him at all. I think that there's some other players out there that were maybe bigger concerns than him.
Definitely a wait and see. For most of these players that we talk about, I think you not only want to wait to trade them out to give them another shot at playing for your team, but you also want to give the potential trade-in target another game to make sure that it wasn't just a flash-in-the-pan performance. Next question is about Taylor Hutt. So he had a good first game first up, 117, playing that role where he just pops around in the midfield, not at halfback really, and as a link-up player. So that actually is pretty lucrative for his price point and is a potential target. Again, I'd give him one more week, and he is around 11 buy play. There's a reason I didn't pick him, despite me loving this price range. So if I'm waiting a week and I've got plenty of guys to swap him for, maybe you guys should wait a week too.
He's going to play a run with role for most of the year. I think he looks like he's going to grab it with both hands, but I don't really think he's going to still post a Supercoach average. He seems like the ultimate round one star.
Next question is from Chicky Palms. Too early to correct Oxley. So I want to get to the sort of rookies now. Oxley and Miller are two very popular rookies, Mark, that, yeah, just 31 first up and 30 respectively. Really not good enough. And Miller, I was really hopeful on because, unfortunately, you know, sad for O'Meara, who's out for the year, but it was good news for Tuk Miller when yeah, he did go down in the knee full game. After performance like that, though, he's still a chance to get dropped.
Yeah, he definitely is after they lost and they won't want to be doing that again. I think that if he's given another shot this week, he played well enough. He did a couple of decent things, just didn't score great. I think that the exact example he's brought up here is Miller to Ellis Yeoman, which I'd probably wait another week on that just to see how Ellis Yeoman goes again and make sure that he does have a secure spot in the Adelaide side. But that seems like something that might actually be worthwhile just because Ellis Yeoman, if he is best 22 for Adelaide, could become a pretty important rookie. But Oxley, like, who exactly are you correcting to? If there's no one obvious to go to, Oxley played. He got subbed out because he was cramping, and if he holds his spot, then that's great. And there's no reason to be moving away from him when there's no one drawing you to them.
And he doesn't play a terrible role in terms of Supercoach. He's just not a lucrative scorer yet, but I definitely hold off definitely on him. Miller is the one that I'm a bit more tempted on, but again, I agree with your sentiments, Mark. I've traded to rookies before that got dropped a week after. We'll move on to the midfield now. We'll start off with Gary Ablett. What are your thoughts on him? Well, we both caved. 119 off, let's face it, a terrible game for Gazza, but champion data love the man. So there's two ways to look at it. One is that that's the worst that he's rocked up to a round one game, and he scored 119 and still did well. And the other flip side is, holy shit, he barely managed a decent score, and it looks like he's going to plummet in price now.
Yeah, it's really one of those cases of it's more important how he looked than how he scored. He really struggled to get involved in the game and wasn't tackling, wasn't marking, wasn't reaching for the ball with his left hand. So that's really, really concerning signs. Now, there's a bit of talk that he'll be able to work his way through it and then he will hit form at some stage. I guess it's just a matter of how far away that is. If it's 8 weeks away, then that's probably too long. But if you can sort of get through it and build up some confidence and strength in 4 weeks, then he's definitely worth keeping. So, yeah, really a bit unsure on Gaz. I want to see one more game out of him. I think it's a bit tricky. He's playing St Kilda so at home, so there's a bunch of points up for grabs, but then he's probably going to cop a pretty hard tag from Waller, so who did a good job on Griffin on the weekend. So it'll be. I'm looking forward to this weekend to seeing how he goes. He's not a trade yet, but I think there's a really good chance that we're going to come on next week's show and say, look, you need to be trading Gary out.
You think there's a good chance?
I think there's a good chance that that's going to happen, yeah. But I still want to see one more game.
Keeping myself very, very, very much optimistic after I've shelled up 700,000. All right, next question from Pat Villanova about Ryan Griffin. So 70 first up under the tag. Now, if you had picked him, Mark, surely you got to go along the mindset of 70 can still be a poor game for Griffin, but he can turn it around next week.
It's kind of really hard for me to comment on this one because I didn't pick him because I thought he would get tagged and have low scoring games. And that's exactly what happened in round one. So if you did pick him, you had to know that this was a reasonably good chance of happening. So you kind of have to ride the bad games and take the good ones, because when he doesn't have a tag, you might go completely nuts and score 170.
Yep. Next question is from St. Gypsy on Twitter, and I think it's pretty similar because the price point similar, potential is pretty similar. Andrew Swallow, worth keeping him?
Read nothing into North Melbourne's game on the weekend. They'll start again this week.
Next question is from Just Looking on Twitter. If Rich scores 70 to 80 in round two, is he a must have? Knowing that Rocky's out and he may be targeted with a tagger. What do you reckon about that, Mark? He obviously likes Rich quite a bit. 70 to 80 isn't huge for a midfield mid-pricer.
Can't imagine a score that Rich gets where I would pick him. If he scores 140 again, that's awesome, but I've missed his two big scores for the year and he's going to cop a massive lockdown tag after that. I think with Beams there this year that he might cop a bit more attention, which might take a little bit off Rich sometimes, but I don't think he's likely to come into the must-have territory.
I mean, I can understand why people are more attracted because of the fact that he might get more midfield time rather than half-back time now that Rocky's moved out there. He is quite popular on other sites, Mark, and I've noticed quite a few people recommending him, and his scores have been good, so I'm a bit reluctant to just write him
off. He's a good player.
Yeah, and I actually like the Rich pick, so I'm a little bit more... I think he can turn out okay. I think the pick is still fraught with danger. I still wouldn't necessarily do it, but I don't necessarily think it's a poor pick either. If he still goes up to 100, like, he'll end up being a pretty decent selection, and he could very well do that. I prefer taking a risk elsewhere. I assume you're the same, Mike. Lachlan Goller's questions about Pat Cripps. So he only had 50 points first up. Sure. Disappointing. 200K. What do you reckon?
Exactly what I described in the preseason. Mick Montas screwed us. He played him in the forward line, and he's a clearance midfielder. That's exactly what he did in the AFL last year. I just don't get it. I'm hoping that things are different this week. They go to Perth. He's from over there, so hopefully he likes playing over there when his family around.
He's such a talent that hopefully it shines through. Unfortunately, at that price point, you want them to be actually consistent with some pretty good scores, so might be a correction. We'll see. Talk about it next week. Dom Sheed's in the same category, and he's already been brought up by you, Mark.
Thanks for bringing him up again.
Yeah, the Fanatic asked about him, but he also asked about trading to Van Berlo or Brayshaw. So I think we'll just talk about them briefly this week, just because Van Berlo, we sort of struck out, but he scored 80, and maybe we could have overthought that one. And Brayshaw, we got zero exposed form on him, but he had something like nine tackles, and he looks like he could actually be like an 80-type plus scorer.
Yeah, Van Berlo 50 at halftime. Just think, again, like a bit like the North players, I just wouldn't read too much into the Adelaide scores either from that game. It's sort of inevitable that someone that would score 60 in a contested game is going to score 80 in that really, really easy win. It was just way too easy for the Crows. Brayshaw does have me interested, though. I want to see one more game.
Vandenberg, Mark, Tom McLean's asking about him. Is he worth picking up this week if you don't have him? So he's one of the ones that maybe we talk about in terms of they're so good that you may as well just pull the trigger this week sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that he's a bit tricky, Vandenberg, because I think he's still pretty close to being fringe best 22 on Melbourne. The thing that was really, really impressive about him was his intensity, and bringing that competitiveness to the Melbourne team might be able to lock him in a spot, especially with Paul Ruse's coach. I think that he'd be really rewarded for having that sort of attitude and that sort of game style. But like we saw in the preseason, he might get knocked out in the first few minutes as well playing like that. Look, I'd want to see one more week out of Vandenberg, I think.
Are there any rookies, Mark, that you would trade to this week just because you might as well bring them in? I'm assuming Clark at that price range, which 70% of teams already have, which is one of the highest I've ever seen, more than Ablett's got before. So
I'm sure that all our listeners have mentioned.
Yeah. But apart from a player like him, is there anybody else that you'd just be like, bring him in if you don't have him?
Bit tricky, I guess. I think that all teams should have McIntosh, Saad, Heaney, Hogan. They're probably the really, really obvious ones. I think Salem's going to come good. Maybe those guys.
And still, you know, depending on if you don't have an obvious trade out target, it still might be worthwhile holding on. So in general, our attitude is probably take a chill pill in general. But
with that said, I do just want to mention that as a counterpoint, 2003, our friend Dimowitz, when he won the competition, did make two trades after round one and two trades after round three and two trades after round four.
If your team's stuffed up, you do need to correct it to get to a good point. Just make sure, identify what's a pick that you took a risk on that's clearly a bad risk and ones that, you know, need more time because you've done your proper research on. Next to the Rucks, Mark, and again, just another headache point. I mean, just a year of headaches. We anticipated this was going to happen, and scoring dropped probably more than people expected. And so there's been just backlash. We want more Ruck scoring. People aren't happy. But we'll start off with a question here. First from Adam Whitfield, and this got 10 likes on Facebook at recording, so clearly a topic right at top of mind. Some of us has gone in with two premium ruckmen, and we discussed that we're trending toward that in the preseason. Luckily, the two of us didn't end up that way, Mark. Seems like a bad call in the end for those guys, Adam reckons. With the new ruck scoring changes, he would like to hear our thoughts now on being proactive and adjusting team structure to capitalize on value. So this might be a situation where it's worth just calling it this week, because scoring changes aren't going to disappear next week.
Look, they could. It could be just an outlying round that it was just a really strange one where all the ruckmans got under 100. With that said, it seems pretty unlikely that that's the case. There do seem to be a few reasons why ruck scoring was down this week, and it does seem to be systemic. So, yeah, look, if I had two premium rucks and I was pretty sure of the way that I wanted to go as far as restructuring, I would be very tempted to do so, whether that's bring in Bell Chambers and then spending that money to upgrade maybe one of the rookies in your midfield, like a Sheed or one of your back mid prices that you're not happy with. I think that's a reasonable step to make. I was looking at the recovery room on the Essendon website this afternoon, and Bell Chambers did have some sort of knee injury just before halftime. He was scoring really well until then, and then he ran out of the match. They said pain-free, but he did struggle a little bit. They said he'll be fine for this week, but just interesting to note that that did happen, so slight doubt there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of correcting this one quite aggressively. My only caveat to that is I think this year we'll return to the old ruck scoring before we got these increases, where we used to lock just Cox and Sandilands away, and that's because there were basically only two premium rucks hitting 100, and I'm not quite sure that's going to be as drastic this year, but I do think that ruck scoring across the board will drop to the point where there will only be very few standout options. So if you're on one of those standout options that you'll eventually want to trade to, there's no point trading him out. So I picked Todd Goldstein because I think he's probably going to be a top two ruck. If I'm going to trade him back in at some point, there's probably no need to aggressively target a cash grab. That might backfire with an injury or whatever. But unless you have a player like that, I would be more than happy to aggressively correct that decision and just go for the mid prices, Leuenberger, Bell Chambers, straight in.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, mate. I think if I had Goldstein's the one that stands out that I wouldn't be trading this week.
Oh, and obviously Nick Nat. The value obviously there is very good.
So if you had Goldstein, Nick Nat, just keep it going.
Yeah. Apart from that, I'd probably be quite aggressive. So that clears the next question from Simon Grigg, who asked, get rid of Goldstein? Yeah, according to that,
no.
But the Sean...
Just because of his durability as much as anything.
Yeah. But Sean,
and he was the only ruckman to get to 100.
Mm-hmm. Sean Van Gijsel's question's next, and again, probably have an answer to this now. Sam Jacobs seems to be a call I will regret. So we agree with that. So move on him.
Yeah, look, I actually would.
And Sandilands, Mark, same.
Yep.
And he's very injury prone, so that's almost an opportunity to correct that potential.
I think
if
I had Sandilands and Bell Chambers already, then I'd probably just keep my one premium ruck. But if I had a two premium ruck set up, I think that's when I'd be adjusting.
We have Leuenberger that we want to talk about next. Lachlan Goller has brought him up. So he scored the fourth highest ruck score this week, and he's only 358K. So is he straight in as an option if you already have Bell Chambers?
I'm not convinced on Leuenberger still. I think that who's Collingwood's ruckman? Like, we're talking Grundy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not really... You can't really rate any ruckman playing against Grundy as how they're going to go for the rest of the year. I think he's going to come up with some much better opposition than that. That's not a slight on Grundy, is he? He's just a young guy. He's going to be a good football player. But yeah, I just don't think that you can make too much assessment based on that. Yeah, I wouldn't get too carried away with Leuenberger personally.
Maybe then if you're considering a correction with Leuenberger, you could potentially hold off and take a wait and see, I guess.
I'm just interested to know your thoughts, Mark. It's Leuenberger or Bell Chambers?
Bell Chambers, easily. We both started with him, and I think that even if he didn't work out to be that high scoring, I would want that flexibility by the end of the year. Like, Bell Chambers isn't leaving my team for the entire year, Mark. Plan for him is to, at the end of the year, sit at my forward bench, not on field. All right, next question is from Chris Ray Rogers. Is Blitzarves the best option for the Ruck 2 spot? He's come out from nowhere, but he's moving around the whole ground this year, playing in defense as well, and seems to be getting those intercept marks that are being worth points, and his endurance across the game seems to equate to a decent score, Mark. 99 points first up against Hawthorn. What do you reckon? Is that good signs?
Yeah, I'm really not sure on this one, man. I mean, he's a developing talent, and what is this, his third year now in the system? And he's played some pretty good performances before. I Don't see him reaching premium numbers, but maybe he's... I don't know. I think I'd trust your opinion on him more than me. I've never really considered him.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, Mark, I wanted to pick him in our draft league and actually wanted to pick him pretty high because he's midfield at
Bloody Amber.
Yeah, but we had Tom Katz, who very, very passionate Geelong supporter, has a lot of Katz
in her. She picked 9 in her 22-player draft team.
So sadly, Blitzar escaped my reaches, but you know, he was on my list for...
he was on mine as well, mate, because of the midfield ruck and Joel eligibility.
But on top of that, as a Geelong supporter, I actually watched him over the preseason and I've been really impressed with how he's covered the ground. And I've been really impressed that he's been actually taking intercept marks. I always just sort of imagine he'd be just this awkward player that it would never be able to kick that well, would never be able to take marks confidently. But you know, he's actually plucking marks out of other proper AFL players' hands and he's developing as Geelong had hoped. So based on
that... So he's a realistic Leuenberger, yes. Bell Chambers alternative.
Yes, definitely. I want to see it backed up, but like... Come on, 99 first up. I paid for Joel Selwood, who was so much more expensive and couldn't do half of what Blitzarves was doing on the day. I was very impressed.
I think our listeners should pay attention to how excited your voice is and think that maybe there's a little bit of bias in your answer.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I never hide that, Mark. I never hide that. All right, on to the next question now, Mark, and we're away from the rocks and into the forwards. Salem, concerns there, Mark, or no concerns at all? Scott McNaughton wants to know.
Sure, this one might come back to bite me, but no concerns at all.
100% agree with that. He's a rookie. He's not going to be consistent, but potential is definitely there.
He looked awesome in the preseason. That wasn't his role that we were worried about. I think that he's going to have some decent games to come up.
And to finish the show, Mark, and that wraps up, a heap of questions from the community. Obviously, so many concerns. We thought the show would go for a lot shorter, but there was end up being a bit to talk about, and I think we enjoyed ourselves anyway. But last question, Mark, corrective trades to finish off. Under what circumstance would you consider them? So what would you actually pull the trigger on this week to leave our listeners with?
Sure. So injury trades, if you picked a rookie that's just not even getting a game or sort of accidentally pick someone that you thought was going to get a game and you missed one of the really good rookies, they're sort of the most obvious spots. And yeah, maybe in the rucks, they're probably the three that stand out to me. What about you?
Agree, Mark. Injuries would be number one. Rocks would be number two. And then rookie decisions that you really missed out on, number three. But even those, I'd probably still hang back a week on. So if not for the rocks, it would probably only be injury trades. I'm pretty conservative at this stage, but I've never won before, Mark. So who knows?
A lesson for everyone at home. Last year, I traded, I can't even remember who it was, but I brought in David Allard after round one. After he scored 140 round one, and I don't think he scored over 60 again in my team, and then got injured, missed a bunch, and his price completely stalled, and it was a massive fail. So be careful of the round one bolters, and everybody, just calm the F down.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark. Brilliant way to end the show, and with that, we'll catch you all next week, ready for round two, and ready for some more serious trade talk, Mark. Catch
I'm ranked up. Higher than you, mate. See ya.
See ya.